ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome to ID, the future. Today, I'm pleased to be joined again by Dr. Jay Richards to talk about science and the evidence for God. In particular, in light of Dr. Richards' work and Steve Meyer's new book, Return of the God Hypothesis, we've been discussing a video clip of one of the most famous astronomers, science popularizers, and agnostics of all time, Carl Sagan. Dr. Richards is the William E. Simons Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute, and author or editor of more than a dozen books, including a groundbreaking book co-authored with astronomer Guillermo Gonzalez, The Privileged Planet. Welcome back, Jay.
Great to be with you, Eric.
So, Jay, last time we were talking in our prior conversation about Carl Sagan and a response he gave to the question about the existence of God in a Q&A following a lecture he delivered. And, you know, I have to say that he didn't really address the question so much as skirt around it with definitions as we talked last time. And, for example, he stated that, you know, although this certainly would not match up with anything approximating the traditional Judeo-Christian conception of God that's typically juxtaposed against the materialist view, as Sagan says, well, if you view God as meaning something like the laws of the universe, then of course God exists. But that's really sort of a definitional game, as you mentioned. Well, let's jump into the clip a little bit. So he's responding to an audience question about the existence of God. And the first thing he points out is that there are different conceptions of God, which is just certainly a fair point. I think, you know, any of us would look around at various religious traditions and various individuals and say, okay, you know, gee, it'd be great if we all had the exact same understanding, if we all had the exact same view. We have to acknowledge that there are different conceptions of God. So that's a fair point. Right. But do you feel like that's an argument against God, or is he drawing too much from this observation?
Well, yeah, I don't really know. What is it? I mean, people often treat that as if it's, I don't know, it sort of is decisively weighs one way or the other. But of course, there's different views of nature, too. It doesn't mean there's not a truth about what nature's like, just because people have had different views. And moreover, just in normal language, if somebody in the West asks you, do you believe in God? Actually, within our linguistic community, everybody pretty much knows what you're talking about, right? That you're talking about something like, do you believe there's a transcendent personal creator, that reality isn't just this kind of impersonal physical universe, but there's a personal kind of fundamental reality that has created everything freely. And so and almost anybody would at least be able to say that. They don't necessarily, they may not have had a course in the doctrine of God, but people pretty much understand that. And you can, that's why you talk about God across cultures. And so in some ways, if Sagan was just saying, let me say what I mean by God, but in some ways, this was an opportunity for him to be a bit squirrely, I think, because of course, when somebody says, do you believe in God? They don't mean, do you believe that there are laws of physics,
laws of nature. Right? Yeah, exactly. And we have different conceptions about a lot of things, including, ironically for Sagan, I think some facts of science that we'd prefer we were all on the same page about, but it doesn't mean the underlying realities you mentioned doesn't exist. It's just that we're continuing to learn and move toward a more perfect understanding in that arena too. So.
Yeah. And I mean, the reality is it's the same story when it comes to science too, is that our understanding of things can grow. And so I don't think the fact that there's a sort of disagreement on these things does that mean we shouldn't keep trying? I mean, the reality is that the entire ID literature is based on recent discoveries in many cases, things that we didn't know 100 years ago. And I think if you sort of return this to the question, does science point toward or away from God, I think the answer to that's fairly clear, is that in some ways, there's never been a better time to believe in God. And I think that's what Steve's book, he compiles essentially all this evidence that, you know, this isn't a mathematical proof for the existence of God, but it's essentially, okay, let's look at the universe and the things that we've learned from science, but do it without blinders and ask the question, okay, which direction does this point in? Does it point toward a purposeless universe and kind of blind and purposeless reality, or does it point in some way to a personal creator? And I think at the very least, it points to a transcendent creator. You get, you know, Steve, even by talking about the importance of information in life, argues that gets us to theism. And so not just deism, where God sort of creates things and lets it go, but that God is, the information and purposes are active within the physical universe. And so that maybe it doesn't prove everything that religious people believe. And of course, you got to keep looking at the evidence. But I think it's an exciting time to be alive, to realize that, gosh, things we've discovered that in many cases we didn't know 50 or 100 years ago make the case for God even stronger now than it was in the past.
Yeah, that's great. And I think, you know, we can kind of turn Sagan's argument around a little bit and say, you know, the fact that the idea of God is so incredibly ubiquitous through widely different cultures and languages and backgrounds, you know, might suggest that there's something behind it. So rather than saying, well, there's different conceptions out there, so therefore we can be dismissive of it, mm-hmm. we might say, wow, it's just so ubiquitous, even across different cultures and backgrounds. So the argument, I think, can be put on the other shoe, so to speak.
It really can. And I mean, I think that the truth of the matter is that materialism and the kind of pantheism of Sagan, that's actually the extreme minority position. I mean, you know, now I don't think these kinds of arguments are decisive, but if we're wanting to sort of appeal to the popularity of ideas, look, some kind of broadly theistic belief is much, much, much more common historically than this kind of arid atheism, which has always been a very narrow and acquired taste for people.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jay, I just want to turn back to this idea of pantheism because it's actually becoming really prominent today. And what's happening, what I see with a lot of scientists is that they are recognizing that, say, the traditional evolutionary paradigm, the simplistic Darwinian, you know, mutation so-called mechanism, doesn't mm-hmm. cut it in terms of explaining the universe or the wonders of biology we see around us. And so they're turning to nature itself to try to explain nature. And so there's a real resurgence of what Sagan was articulating many years ago, that, you know, nature is kind of this closed loop and it gives rise to everything that's here. And that's something that I've started to see more and more common among science writers and scientists today. And so there's one author in particular, origin of life researcher in particular, that says, hey, our understanding of physics and chemistry today doesn't help us understand or doesn't get us to understanding how life could arise. But rather than being willing to look and say, hey, maybe there's a creative intelligence behind it, she says, instead, what we need is a new law of physics. So we're just going to stick within this paradigm. We're going to stick within this closed bubble here and continue to see nature as the creator of itself, the creator of life, the creator of us, yep. ultimately. And we need to find some new law of physics.
Well, and to me, what this signals is there's just such severe limits to materialism. I mean, if you're going to use just materialism for your explanatory toolkit, and materialism isn't true, reality is much, much larger than that, then you're constantly going to be bumping up against things that you can't explain because you don't have enough categories. You don't have enough ways, you know, tools in your toolkit to actually work with it. And right. so that's why I think you see this in Sagan too. It's a kind of a metaphysical schizophrenia in which you want to be committed to materialism, but also have these sorts of instincts, you know? And so in the case of the scientist that you're describing, she has a clear instinct that, okay, we're going to need something other than the really reductionist set of categories we have. But at the same time, she's not willing to really introduce robust teleology into her science. And so she's hoping there's some other law out there. I don't know exactly what that would be. It's sort of like, for many people that are committed to this way of thinking, they're willing to entertain almost anything but genuine purposes and an actual God, right? Mm-hmm. That's like just the one thing that absolutely can't be considered.
Yeah, that's great. I wanted to talk about this clip with you because a growing number of people today seem to take a view that nature itself is what we're talking about when we talk mm-hmm. about God, or that the answer to creation is to be found in nature itself. And this approach is a kind of pantheism, and we're really seeing a wave of this take off in the scientific community.
Yeah, in fact, it's not just the scientific community. It's sort of popular culture. I mean, I hear mm-hmm. people, you know, of course, so for a long time in the West, at least, you know, people said, thank God. It was just, you know, if something happens, oh, thank God. And people now often talk about, well, be grateful to the universe or and things like that, right? Which is such a weird thing, but it's actually a fairly common way of speaking now.
I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, it depends on where thank the universe. And so at least you kind of know what you're talking about. Whereas if you just redefine God, right, to the laws of physics, it's not even clear what's being said.
Right, right. Yeah. So this really creeps in the popular culture, as you said, but also in whether we're talking about the origin of the universe or the origin of new biological features or the origin of life. So there's this strong sense that's embodied in the agnosticism of Sagan. And I'm not necessarily trying to pick on him, but I'm using him as a springboard because he's one of the best and most articulate defenders of this kind of view that nature is a closed entity that exists by itself, governs itself, created life, created us, and so on. And in that sense, nature itself really becomes God.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right.
That was part two of my conversation with Dr. Jay Richards. In a future episode, we'll wrap up the discussion with a detailed analysis of Sagan's argument that by setting aside our belief in God, we can finally get around to the hard work of saving ourselves. It's a provocative claim, but what does the evidence actually say? Join us again soon to find out. For ID the Future, I'm Eric Anderson. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.